Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the first Know Your Foe show of the year. And we probably have our returning favorite guest on Know Your Foe year after year. And I just learned I've been mispronouncing his name all this time. His name is Drew Geer. I've been calling him Drew Geyer, but Drew Geer is his actual name, spelled like Geyer, but it's Drew Geer. Drew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. It's awesome. I always love getting together with you to do these shows. It's nice. And it comes at the perfect time of the year when neither one of us has anything bad yet to say about our own team.
Well, I've got some bad things to say, but that's okay. I got to say, we really appreciate it in January, you hosting us for dinner the night before, you and Chris, and also at the tailgate. We appreciate it both. And I'll say this. There are a lot of fan bases that have some nasty, ugly elements to them that you don't want to rub elbows with. The Bills fans are great. In general, I'd say they're just great to go and meet as people. And, you know, no fan base is going to be 100% in that way, but we really appreciated meeting you guys for the first time personally. You know, obviously, we've met each other many times, you know, over StreamYard, but not in person.
It's funny. I actually bonded with a lot of Ravens fans a bunch of years ago, back when it started with a conversation about, it was me and Bill Barnwell going back and forth, ESPN's Bill Barnwell, trying to shame us for an opinion that we had about Josh Allen and some acrimony he and I had back and forth over it. And I think he thought he could use the size of his social media platform to kind of shame us into, hey, look at this stupid opinion these guys have. And the thing I said was, listen, I can show my work. I do all the math. I crunch the numbers on my own in an Excel workbook. You have interns who do this. It's not a good idea. And after we went back and forth a bit, there was a lot of Ravens fans who said, actually, I can see how you came to the position you're holding. Whether or not I agree with it, I can see how you got there. And that's actually really smart. And we ended up having some great dialogue with a lot of Ravens fans. And Ravens fans are welcome at our tailgate anytime.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. And it certainly was a fun tailgate. Got introduced to a new drink. I don't remember what it was. That means it was a good drink, I guess.
Chris anyway. Is a cocktail. He's a craft cocktail hobbyist.
There you go. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills and their offseason here. Biggest moves this offseason?
Biggest moves this offseason, probably the place I'd start would be in a year when we knew we needed to go find an alpha type pass rusher or someone to augment our pass rush, they decided not to get into, which ultimately, if you think about it, all these major pass rushers that were rumored to be available, none of them ended up moving. Not Trey Hendrickson, you know, Max Crosby, none of them left. And right now I have no thoughts about Micah Parsons. I'm not even allowing that to enter my psyche because that's a pipe dream. He will be a Dallas Cowboy because there's just too much money tied up out there for these guys. Those franchises can't lose those players. So seeing that the Bills were able to get Joey Bosa, I believe that that's going to be an investment. It's a risky one, admittedly, but I think that's an investment that should pay dividends if they use him properly. You know, we all know that he's not the most durable player in the NFL. And when he is healthy and he's allowed to rush the passer, he does so with a lot of technique, a lot of speed, a lot of physicality. And at the same time, he can still give you some of the edge setting run defense that every 4-3 D end has to have to play Sean McDermott's style of defense. With that said, the reason you could get him for $12 million in a 1-year deal is because he is very injury prone. And so if anything, it's almost to our advantage that we're catching the Ravens when we are, because I don't know if we were to see each other again in the playoffs, if Joey Bosa would even be walking around on 2 feet by that point.
All right. 9-year career. And the last 3 years, he's played a total of 28 games. And he still put out 18 sacks in those 28 games, which is far from bad. But he's
very talented. It's just his availability. And you know what they say, the best ability is availability. And that's the only hole in his game. He would still be a Charger if he had that.
All right. Fair enough. Any surprises in the draft?
Surprises in the draft, I think, were just how intensely they focused on remaking the defensive line with rookies. And I think that when you look at the final 53-man roster, it's telling that they signed Greg Rousseau in the offseason to an extension. They got a relatively team-friendly deal for a player who is kind of what his draft profile said he was going to be. He's a big, long, physical defensive end who can set an edge. He gives you a little bit of pass rush acumen, more so if you reduce him down inside as an interior pass rusher, or if he can primarily rush against right tackles. The problem is when Von Miller has been here for the last two, three seasons, it was primarily Greg Rousseau going up against left tackles. And that was problematic because his pass rush skill set, just he's a player who I think gets lost in a pass rush plan. He doesn't have a great one. So once he gets past his first move, he can't link things together. And he very quickly gets washed out of a play by very talented left tackles. That's why he was always better suited to rushing on the right side of the line. The problem is you had a guy who came in and said, that's my job. I want that. Now it sounds like they've got him back to his natural position. You bring in Bosa to rush against left tackles and you say, okay, this looks like it could work. But what do we make of this defensive tackle room? They weren't that great last season. Our rushing stats would show you how poor the interior of the offensive line did in terms of run defense. And then in terms of interior pass rush, there wasn't a ton of success to speak of, and Oliver had a decent year. If I go back here and I look at it, just so I don't feel like I'm talking out of school here, I want to see, where did Ed Oliver finish? Because he's one of those, and he's a polarizing player, 3 sacks on the year. 3 sacks for Ed Oliver, who's making a lot of money to be a pass rushing 3-tech. It's hard. You know, you're under 300 pounds, mm-hmm. and under 6'1" as a defensive lineman is not a good idea. It's not a good place to be. 6'1", 6'2". So the Bills came into this draft and really put a lot of effort into remaking the backups in the interior of that defensive line with youth, and that surprised me.
Okay. So my primary question coming out of the draft would be this for Buffalo. Buffalo, a team that obviously got kind of burned by the Von Miller deal, but would have thought that an edge rusher would certainly be among the players that would be considered by Buffalo in the draft. Why did they pass on Mike Green at number 41?
The Bills are one of those teams, and you can say it's right, you can say it's wrong. I firmly believe that there are things, and I know that this is going to sound crazy when you think about some of the headlines that were out there about Max Hairston, but the Bills really do their due diligence with in conjunction with NFL security when it comes to issues of off-the-field concerns and character issues. Mm-hmm. I think our GM has a real, at this point, I don't even think it's organizational. I don't think it comes from ownership. I think it's our GM and our coach, and I think that they both kind of have a real personal problem with things like that. Case in point, the Matt Ariza situation, where we drafted a guy who everyone knew on the football field was a phenomenal punter. And when it wasn't even that they found out there was allegations against Matt Ariza. That's not the reason he was released. The reason he was released is because our GM felt that he didn't tell them the complete truth when they asked him about it. And they said that was the differentiation. If he had been honest with us, he'd probably still be a Buffalo Bill. They felt like as more information was coming out, as the process played out, they said, okay, if you're not willing to open up to us about stuff like this, we can't trust you. And if we can't trust you, we can't have you in the locker room. Okay. And so I find it very interesting that they tend to take guys like Mike Green off the draft board, where you take a look at any player the Bills drafted. I mean, we ended up with Landon Jackson. He's not as stiff as that one viral video of him running a drill in high school makes it. He's no longer that, you know, robotic in terms of his pass rush, but Mike Green looks phenomenal. And it looks like a giant miss by not just the Bills, but a lot of teams.
Yeah. I agree with that. The Ravens are going through the Justin Tucker situation as they're having to make the decision on Mike Green. They passed on him like every other team did in the first round.
Yes.
They're amazingly lucky they got him in round two. And the reason they said they drafted him at that point was if we didn't, Kansas City was going to do it in 3 picks.
So we have you guys to thank then. to thank for not giving the Evil Empire one more play.
Well, you know, it's Evil Empire 1 or Evil Empire 2. Hey,
you know what? I would rather have the Ravens at this point. I would rather have it that way.
No one wants to see that the Kansas City another Super Bowl. I don't want to see them host another playoff game for a decade if we could have that. But
From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. There you go. All right, let's keep moving on. Long run cap situation is always something I want to talk about. Who do they have as cap problems right now for Buffalo?
Well, the Buffalo Bills kind of took their medicine a bit over the last two seasons. So now what you've seen is the Bills are in a very advantageous cap situation because they did the thing last season. Last season was supposed to be, I don't know if any of your listeners listen to mainstream media, ESPN, Fox Sports, everyone was calling, ringing the bell saying, this is the end. This is the end for Buffalo. I think Emmanuel Acho said that not only is the window closed, they put bars over it. For the Buffalo Bills, because we hemorrhaged so much veteran talent. And they did that and then we went to the AFC Championship game. And then from that exercise and clearing the salary cap last season, we were allowed to come into this season and start retaining what we see as young core pieces of the team moving forward. So you were able to go out and use your cap space to sign Greg Rousseau, sign your starting middle linebacker in Terrell Bernard. You were able to go give extensions to what you see as the best cornerback on your team in Christian Benford. And so what they've been able to do, Khalil Shakir, the wide receiver, he also inked an extension. And so what they've done is they've set themselves up that they've been able to retain a lot of young, talented pieces that they now see as being able to sprinkle in free agents like a Joey Bosa, go out and get a Jordan Palmer, and go out and then draft a handful of rookies and year over year, hopefully be able to groom what they believe can be a Super Bowl roster while having flexibility from a cap space standpoint.
Okay, so I've got to ask this question maybe a different way, or maybe there's another guy you'd suggest that I ask about this, but the Bills are last in cap space in 25 right now.
Yep.
In 26, they're, you know, 8 from the bottom, I think it is, but they're in a negative number right now.
Yep.
It does not seem like they have the flexibility you're talking about to go out and do a whole lot.
And that's where I think that, you know, when you applaud GMs for things, a lot of times it's, I don't want to say it happens in a silo, but right now Howie Roseman's getting all of his flowers. He's getting all his flowers for, hey, look at how competitive the Eagles have been. And rightfully so. They've won 2 Super Bowls in a handful of years. And they are burning all the boats from a salary cap perspective. And as we joked about on your appearance in our show, teams that do that tend to pay for it at some point, because for as many people say that the NFL salary cap isn't real, it's the bill comes due one way or another. So some iteration of the Eagles fan base will be cursing the name of Howie Roseman a decade from now when they're still trying to dig out of the hole he's creating for the team right now.
Yeah, we mentioned this on your show, but I really hope that a new CBA, they don't somehow let the Eagles out of their cap debt or let the Browns out of their cap debt. That would completely suck for the rest of the league who's played it straight and played it fair, basically, for the most part.
And it would set a terrible precedent. Mm-hmm. I just think it would set a really terrible precedent. But so one of the things that Brandon Bean, that puts him, you know, when you think about, so takes winning Super Bowls off the table as far as how you evaluate a GM. Brandon Bean is a real savant at crafting contracts. Now, who he targets, right now we're stuck paying Curtis Samuel. And Curtis Samuel has been a relative non-factor for us. His moves and his draft picks, you know, he's also the guy who famously took Cody Ford and traded up for Cody Ford in the second round. They're not all winners. They can't be. But when it comes to contract design, he is a savant at leaving himself every single year. He's got levers to pull that make sense to create cap space. Now, every GM does some version of that, but the problem is a lot of times it's either a cut that you don't want to make, or it's a restructure that you don't really want to give. And you say to yourself, oh man, I really don't want to have to do this, but I could if I needed money. Case in point, we have Dawson Knox under contract. He's in the, you know, his window to cut him with no real dead money implications about to open up for us. Right now, his cap hits $14 million. We all know he will not play well enough to earn that $14 million. He's a blocking tight end who's a threat in the red zone. I don't think he's ever eclipsed 600 yards receiving. That cap hit is crazy. But it's because he's played so well and some of the people we've drafted and brought in haven't performed that Dawson Knox is still on this roster. but it's still manageable, and he's still an integral member of the offense. If they wanted to, though, they could free up a few million dollars just by restructuring his contract and giving him a short extension. And they don't want to do that. They're content to let Dawson Knox work his way off the roster. But as you go down, you find players like the extension that was given to Spencer Brown, the recent Deion Dawkins extension, the Josh Allen extension. Every year has clauses built into it, and the way the cash gets moved around, they can create cap space when they need it. But they're not obligated to. And I think that him having the wherewithal to build contracts in a way that's savvy and helps the team like that, without being, they're in your division. You know about this, the Bengals. They're Scrooge McDuck when it comes to contracts, right, to a point where it will inevitably be detrimental to them. And it may already be to that point in terms of obtaining talent. So
I agree.
Yeah. So we get to walk the fine line between those two things of we still make decisions that are team friendly, but at the same time, it's not insulting to the players.
Okay. Well, fair enough. And they certainly have led the way. I think they got out in front of the Josh Allen contract in particular, rapidity, which put them in a better position than the Ravens ended up in terms of being second to the table. They ended up having to pay Lamar more. And actually, they were like sixth to the table because there's a whole bunch of quarterbacks signed in between the two. But let's talk about the offense a little bit and start with Allen. In terms of strengths and weaknesses, is there anything different that Josh Allen is that they're talking about that he brings to his game this year that's different than he did before?
I think in the past, I think last season was an eye opener for Josh Allen because you've watched Josh Allen play hero football more often than not, and it's made for a lot of really cool highlight reels. It's also led to this phenomenon that people refer to as sugar high Josh, where the camera will pan to him and his eyes are wide and he looks like a crazy, but he looks like he just did smelling salts. And then you watch him go out there and the first snap, it's a shotgun play. He could just hand it off inside. Instead, he calls an audible. And then he fires a howitzer across the middle of the field that's so hard that his wide receiver can't catch it. And then usually when they're trailing, and you would watch him just sort of, even for a star quarterback, unravel a bit. Last season was the most composed you've ever seen, Josh. But I think it's because he finally had a rushing attack that he felt like he could trust. And that he trusted that they could keep him in third and manageable more often than not. And so he felt the pressure come off of himself in his game. And he opened up a little bit about that in this year's Hard Knocks, about how he feels like he, for being a league MVP, he feels like he doesn't have to work that hard. For the first time in his career, he feels like, rightfully so, James Cook is a talent. The offensive line is very good. He feels like he no longer has to press the issue when it comes to how he executes offense. And in that way, you watched his turnover numbers drop precipitously last year. And so some people say it's an aberration, and it could be. I'm sure we will see an uptick in his turnover numbers this year. But he's playing a looser style of football because he no longer feels like he has to force balls into double coverage if he doesn't want to. Because he can kill a play and say, okay, if it's first and 10 and I have to throw this one away, I trust my running game is going to get me 3-4. And I can live with third and six and not have to do anything that puts the game itself in jeopardy. And I think that's probably the biggest psychological difference in Allen's game.
All right. Well, fair enough. How about the current state of the offensive line? Take us through one position at a time. And I'm going to allocate you 2 minutes for this process.
Here we go. Deion Dawkins, the old faithful. He's just the most reliable offensive lineman we have. He's a preeminent talent. He's up there now towards the top of the league. He's finally getting the recognition he deserves as a technician at left tackle. Next to him is David Edwards, who I don't think gets his due. And unfortunately, he's a guy we're going to lose next season to free agency because Osiris Torrance, his partner on the other side of the offensive line at guard, is an up-and-coming talent. He's a physical specimen. He's huge. Not quite as big as Daniel Falele, but he's very technical in terms of how he pass protects. He's a mauler in the run game, and they will sign him, and unfortunately not have the money to keep David Edwards, even though he's the only member of the Bills starting offensive line that already has a Super Bowl ring. And then Connor McGovern, who spent most of his career as a guard, and there was a lot of hand-wringing here in Buffalo when he took over from Mitch Morse's center. And they said, we're just going to kick the guard inside and it'll work. And it has. He went to a Pro Bowl. So on the whole, you have, and then Spencer Brown. Spencer Brown is like, this is what, to see him in person, you're like, oh, so this is what Vikings, like being around Vikings must have been like. He's just a mammoth human being with a nasty attitude, a lot of broad wingspan, which is always helpful for a right tackle because generally speaking, you play right tackle when you don't pass protect well. So between them, the five of them, they make up probably the most definitely the most cohesive offensive line in our division. I think one of the better, more veteran offensive lines, maybe in the entire AFC.
Okay, well, fair enough. They've, you know, in terms of continuity, they're one of the teams that is probably up there with the Ravens for that. The Ravens had they have a continuity metric that Aaron Schatz puts out, showed the Ravens as the highest level of continuity. They really need it with the players they have to kind of get by. But Buffalo has got obviously some talent at both tackle spots. Talk about the wide receiver core. Take us through that.
The wide receiver core, the ethos of the Bills, it's on hats, it's on shirts, it's everybody eats. And that's exactly what you would say if you do not have a wide receiver one. If you do not have someone who on a week-to-week basis you know is the most talented in terms of their matchup against their opponent, you have to live and die on the hill of skill sets and scheme. And that's what this group is. You have Joshua Palmer, who is probably the most technical route runner in terms of outside wide receiving talents that we have. Keon Coleman is a second-year player who plays with a lot of physicality. He can win. You know, Ravens fans know this from the divisional round game. Back shoulder fades, sideline catches that are kind of, you know, over the shoulder. If he can get a size advantage on a cornerback, he does have the ability to win a lot of contested catches. And his route running has improved throughout this offseason. You know, people are calling for, hey, this is going to be the year he takes a giant step forward. I still think, like, I'll wait with bated, you know, I'm trying to think about how I want to say this. I don't want to be disparaging to the player. He could take a giant step forward, but I think that it's going to take another year because you don't just become a good route runner when you were as bad as he was last year. Khalil Shakir is the NFL's preeminent third down threat. When you think about third downs and you look at some of the metrics and the advanced analytics on his ability to create first downs, yards after catch, yards after contact, which is a running back statistic, but Khalil Shakir finished in the top five in the entire NFL in it. That's impressive when you're a guy who's under 6 feet tall. And it makes him incredibly hard to defend because he works in the areas where most teams struggle to pass defend, which is at the linebacker and safety level in the middle of the field. So with those top three, we have a really good 1-2-3. We can line up an 11 personnel. We can go with a 12 personnel base package if we need to. And everything's hunky-dory. Our coach said this, though, during a recent press conference after a training camp. We know who our 1-2-3 are. The problem is it's everybody else. We have no idea what we're doing beyond that. And so we're stuck with Curtis Samuel. He, by virtue of the contract that Brandon Bean gave him, which he has not lived up to. He's often injured. And when he is in the game, he's more of a decoy than he is an actual threat to catch the ball or do anything productive with it. Elijah Moore, who Ravens fans might be familiar with from your matchups with him last season as a Cleveland Brown. I think that he can be okay. I think that Bills fans might be conflating his actual value to the offense. In terms of his ability to operate, they say, oh, he can work inside and outside. I don't know about that. I don't know that he can. I think that I wouldn't, if I'm a betting man, I probably wouldn't put my money on it.
So you mentioned two guys to start this in Coleman, who averaged 9.7 yards per target last year. I think it was 9.7, might've been 9.8. And it was 9.8. And Khalil Shakir, who has 9.7 yards per target career. Okay, those are outstanding numbers. I mean, anybody who really understands yards per target, that's the most important receiving statistic is yards per target because it combines the rate at which you catch the ball with your yards per reception. People talk about yards per route run, giving you a picture as well, but it's yards per target is the one that really matters because it gets away. It's an efficiency statistic. It doesn't get away from the guys who get more targets. It looks to me like the Buffalo offense, frankly, with less receiving talent might be what the Ravens offense is in terms of being spread the football around, let the offense run through Josh Allen, let it run through Lamar Jackson. Yep. And those are the guys who are going to make the plays. And if you're a receiver, you know, check your ego at the door.
100%. And it was nice to see Tyrell Shavers, our sixth wide receiver. That was a fan favorite from the last two preseasons, who fans really felt, watching the games. I mean, he played at Alabama for a season. I was a little bit familiar with him, and then he left the program. It's hard for a guy like that to crack a roster in Alabama when you're behind legitimate first round talent. So he floated around in college football, came here as an undrafted free agent, and really put the work in and really tried to just make himself whatever the team needed to be to let him be on the field. You know, last year as a highlight reel, I think it was a 7-yard pass that he took 60 something yards for a touchdown against the Jets, but it's the Jets. And then, you know, he goes on to kind of disappear and everyone says, oh, why don't we see more Tyrell Shavers? And I say, well, the coaches don't think he earned it. They see him every day in practice. It's not like they're unaware that there's a talented player in their midst that they're just choosing not to let him play because of political reasons. NFL football is the ultimate meritocracy. If that guy is good enough to be on the field, coaches will find a way to get him involved.
Yeah, good point.
So then with this preseason, you watch Tyrell Shavers really put in the work in the offseason to improve his body control, improve his hands. I mean, it's, again, floating on social media. It was on HBO's Hard Knocks. He makes a ridiculous one-handed catch like into his body where he has to cradle the football while he's being harassed by a DB and going to the ground. It's a great play, but it's a testament to the fact that that catch doesn't happen last year. Last year's iteration of this player would not have made that catch whatsoever. He's growing as a young athlete, and I think it's great. It sends a great message to the locker room that, hey, you put in the work and you execute, we'll put you on the roster. He's also our starting punt gunner, which doesn't hurt. He's very physical and he's very fast in terms of straight line speed.
All right. How about the running back room? How often does Buffalo use a fullback, if at all?
We have a fullback, Reggie Gilliam. Reggie Gilliam's career stat lines are hilarious considering that he's a fullback. He sees almost no, there are more games than not where he sees single digit snaps. But he is a special teams pick. That's why he's here. He is one of our core special teamers. And once in a while, they'll bring him in around the red zone. And when they decide to run like bootlegs, you have to defend him because he catches like a tight end. And so it just gives often defensive coordinators one more thing they have to think about when you go down to those consolidated offensive packages in those areas of the field. And they feel like they get an exam, like some sort of advantage out of that. But as a lead blocker, you almost never see him working in that capacity. And we've talked over the years. Patrick Ricard is just one of my favorite football players of all time. And so knowing what he is in terms of a fullback and then thinking about the Bills having a fullback, they shouldn't even be called the same thing.
Yeah. It is a different situation at different offense. You mentioned that they still are running a lot out of 12 personnel. Give a kind of a division for me. How often do they have two tight ends on the field?
They have two tight ends on the field fairly often. I mean, if I had to break it up into a percentage, I would say if they're running 12, what they like to do though, is they like to bring in Alec Anderson. And he's actually one of my X factors for this game because in the offseason, he had to have meniscus surgery. And so one of the things that they love to do is bring in, instead of a tight end, because think about our two tight ends, Dawson Knox, who everyone knows kind of just this highly paid guy, veteran guy. He can give you a little bit in the passing game in the open field, but he's more valuable in the red zone. Dalton Kincaid, field stretcher, more athletic guy. That's why we drafted him in the first round, more of a wide receiver than an inline blocker. Alec Anderson is basically he's our backup guard. Mm-hmm. He's played center, but he's athletic enough to line up off the tackle's shoulder, right, and he can pull and he can do a lot of things for you. And so in that capacity, they trust him more so than putting an extra tight end out there.
He had 13 snaps as OL6 in the divisional game. He was in there a lot as an eligible receiver and constantly called in.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think the same thing is true this year, potentially, as was true last year, that the Ravens have a weakness at inside linebacker and a strength at safety behind it, where they if you're going to take advantage of the Ravens in the passing game, that might be the best place. And honestly, you know, this time of year, these kind of comments are a little bit out of school because, frankly, we don't know what the Ravens defense is going to be. We don't know what the Bills defense or offense is going to be because none of these guys played at all in the preseason. Nope. Not any one of them for the Ravens. They had their total offensive line played two series in the preseason, and none of their other skill position players played at all. So, you know, you're really left with just guessing at what this offense might look at. But if you're talking about, you know, same thing with the defense too, because they didn't play their top defenders in the game. But I would presume that taking advantage of inside linebackers is going to be something they try and do. Do you have a sense of that is something they'd like to do, or do you think they'll try and run the football? What's Buffalo doing going into this game?
Into this game, I think that's going to be the place they're going to have to go because I don't foresee a lot of wins on the outside or deep. I think your safety room is really talented, and I think that on the outside, you have enough boundary talent. I said the same thing about Gabe Davis that I'm going to say about Keon Coleman. Players like that, generally speaking, do their most, and statistically it tends to skew this way. They do most of their damage when operating from the slot because they just, with their size and their speed and their physicality, they have a natural, like they're a natural mismatch for safeties and linebackers.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com. with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
The problem is coaches see that size and that physicality and say, oh man, I need you on the outside. And so they tend to play boundary just as often as they shift inside. And I think that's why you haven't seen yet the league wide, just every team having two battering rams as their slot receivers. I'm hoping someday we see some team just go full bore into it and say, I want the biggest, just mammoth group of wide receivers you can give me. And we're going to beat up linebacker cores all over the NFL. Mm-hmm. With that said, the route running of Palmer is why I think that they're going to be able to get away with some of this, is because you're going to have to at least keep a safety over the top, because if he can get separation, you need somebody in either the deep quarter, deep third, who's going to be able to man that portion of the field. That will leave a natural space with the linebacking core, and that's when Kincaid and Coleman, when they do reduce him inside as a slot talent, because, and I think it's where Elijah Moore is here on the roster. I think that they do think that they can throw him out there because they did this with they did it with Kincaid last year. They did it with sometimes with Shakir, but it's not convincing when you put a wide receiver that small on the boundary. Nobody believes you're throwing to him. Mm-hmm. The defense knows what's happening. I think if you can put anything that smells like a viable threat on the outside, it allows you to do kind of what, you know, they let Mac Hollins walk in the offseason. He's now a Patriot, making a lot more money than the Bills offered him. They see Keon Coleman playing more slot and doing the Mac Hollins role, the run blocking, the dirty work, but also being a mismatch against linebackers and slot corners, which is how Mac Hollins went from being kind of just a journeyman wide receiver to having a career season and leading our team in touchdowns.
One of the first guys you mentioned there was Gabe Davis. And I just want to say Gabe Davis is to the Bills receiving core, has a similar relationship to owing a high percentage of his salary to Josh Allen as the Ravens running backs owe to Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, I always, when I'm on radio, whatever, I say Lamar Jackson gets a 15% commission on all rushing yards. But Gabe Davis in his career with the Bills, 9.1 yards per target, went to Jacksonville in year five. They let him get away and he averaged 5.7 yards per target.
Yeah.
And that's a mammoth drop off the cliff. And, you know, that's been true basically of every running back. Their success rate in particular has gone way up when they came to play with Lamar Jackson. It's gone way down when they leave. The highest success rate in NFL history for any running back, and this they've been charting this now for 30 years, have a success rate in terms of keeping up with the sticks on a down-by-down basis. The highest success rate ever is Gus Edwards.
Edwards was a player I was so mad at you guys for owning the rights of for as long as you did.
Good player. Anyway, let's move on to the defense, talk a little bit about what's going on there. Start us up front in terms of the defensive line, you know, how they deal with rotation and who they want in there on a down by down basis.
Well, so this is one of the funny things about the Buffalo Bills schematically. Most teams want to have complementary defensive tackle talents. They want to go into a game saying, okay, if I have, especially if you're a 4-3 defense, you want to know that you have a one tech who can eat space, you know, occupy duo blocks and who can kind of two gap in a defense for you so that the rest of the defense can operate and flow around him and that he can open up one-on-one blocking matchups for his compatriots there. The Buffalo Bills employ exactly one of those types of players on the entire roster. That's Taquan Jones, and he's getting long in the tooth. He had his first season in a Bills uniform was really, really special. And then he got hurt and then he still came back and was pretty useful. Then he had a down year, and now I don't know what we're going to get from him. I don't know what he has left in the tank as a, you know, like some places will even list him as a nose tackle because that's just kind of his size and his makeup physically. He's your traditional one tech. So then going into this year's draft, I think everybody thought in free agency, everyone said, okay, the Bills have to go get another one tech. And, you know, so you saw guys like Alfred Collins being mocked to Buffalo by Bills fans who just kind of have a head for this stuff. And so it frustrated the heck out of everybody when they saw him go out there and not just knowing that they have a small three tech in Ed Oliver, double down by trading up in the first round for TJ Sanders, mm-hmm. but then also go out and spend a fourth round pick on a guy in Deion Walker, who despite his size is not a one tech defensive tackle, 6'7", 348 pounds, but he plays the game of three tech defensive tackle.
More of a penetrator than I saw that he had a really high pass rush win rate in the preseason, one of the highest among the interior guys.
I've been thinking about having this conversation with you all day because of all the people I could ramble at about the pass rush win rate of a rookie. Mm-hmm. You might be one of the few people who appreciates it. The beauty of these rookies in this system, this is a team that doesn't care. Their attitude is we don't need complementary talents. You know what we want? We want penetrators everywhere, and we will live or die on the hill of at least we're disruptive behind the line of scrimmage. And if we get blown off the football when the interior, we go up against a team with a really good interior offensive line, so be it. We'll roll the dice on that. We would rather know that every single member of the defensive line has some sort of pass rush upside and gives you some sort of penetration ability. Deion Walker was a guy who was talked about as being a potential first round pick in 2024. Suffers a back injury, plays the year out though, has a down year for Kentucky, and then gets picked in the fourth round. And the Bills diagnose what the problem is and say, okay, we think we can fix this because we had Spencer Brown, who is a big, tall, heavy offensive lineman, had a similar type of back injury. And we're going to take this rehab plan. We're going to apply it to you. And we're going to see if we can't get you healthier and work you along until we think you're ready. So he missed a chunk of the offseason program, you know, the OTAs, the mini camps. So he was still working back through this back problem. Then the preseason started and he was just wearing out interior offensive linemen, because just physically at 6'7", 348, when you watch his movement ability and his lateral agility, it's incredible for a man that size with that type of wingspan to be able to do the things that he's doing. You watch him, and it's not just that, but it's also his pass rush plan as a young defensive tackle. You watch him pull a lineman and then set him up for the arm over. And you watch him, you know, on the snap on a rushing play, his eyes are in the backfield, but he's holding his man right until he chops the arms down and then pushes a gap to stop the running back for no gain. He knows a lot of savvy things that I wouldn't have expected to see out of a fourth round draft pick. Mm-hmm. He's playing more like what the world thought he could have been if he had repeated his 2024 collegiate season. And that will get harder. He's been playing backups. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. But it's good to see from a pick that late in the draft that you're getting performance at that level. Now the team can sand down his rough edges because he's not perfect. He has lateral agility. And when he can play a lineman heads up, it's difficult because of his wingspan and everything else for them to anchor into him. But And gap runs, he's very difficult to defend, or at least for if you're an offensive lineman trying to create space, it's very hard to do it on a gap style run. But in terms of zone blocking, he gets hit with reach blocks a lot because his pad level's not great. He still hasn't refined that in his game. And for as fluid as he is in terms of lateral movement, he gets too high. And all it takes is one lineman to get a hand on him and he just gets put out of position.
Huh. How does he set his feet? Obviously he's a penetrator. You just mentioned this, but the Ravens have had a wide variety in their nose tackles and their ability to set their feet versus double teams. The Ravens use a lot of duo. And I'm wondering what, you know, how easy is it to get a guy who has obviously some height? I'll call it a disadvantage.
It is a disadvantage.
They got to be Michael Pierce in terms of really knowing how to set their feet at the right angle relative to their opponent.
And you've seen him be up and down in that regard. In some plays, he'll anchor well, he'll hold up against a two-man block, and it's great because he has the size to do it. The problem is, again, pad level and technique. When he doesn't see it coming or his feet are not set properly, you can watch him just, it's almost comical the way he gets bowled over. I likened it during one of the preseason games to watching Shaq fall down in a basketball game, because you're like, he's too big to be falling that way. Mm-hmm. It's just comical. The thing that kind of bails him out in that regard is TJ Sanders. TJ Sanders, while not having the splashy plays during the preseason, I think His lows were a little bit higher than Deion Walker's, although his ceiling wasn't, or at least his flashes weren't nearly as bright. And I think that that's a good thing. If you're also another under 300-pound, three-tech interior defensive lineman, it's good to see that your negative plays, you didn't make nearly as many of them as some people might expect a rookie to do in the preseason. He, you know, again, holding up well in run defense, which was a problem of his coming out of college. It's not that they knocked him, but they said it wasn't a strong suit of his and that double teams he would struggle with. But he seemed to handle them pretty well, fairly well in the preseason. So with the two of them, what they do is they give a great rotational boost to that interior defensive line. And I think that more so than anything else we added on defense in the offseason, besides maybe Joey Bosa, is going to make a difference in what the Buffalo Bills' fortunes are in terms of their run defense and also in terms of their enhanced pass rush this season.
So the Ravens had a couple of fourth round picks, and Deion Walker was one of the ones I was kind of upset with going at number 109 to Buffalo, because the Ravens had 129. I think they had 135 maybe originally. It became Carson Vinson. That might have been 136, because I think they traded back to 141 to get Carson Vinson. Weird trade, by the way. They traded back five spots from round four to round five and up five spots in round six. It didn't make any sense. They explained it and it was something like they weren't ready to pick or whatever. It didn't make any sense at all. It gave up value is what it effectively was. They lost a chance to get a couple of different defensive linemen, and they ended up taking Carson Vinson, who was a developmental offensive tackle at that point. So it was a really interesting moment in that draft for the Ravens, but not the Costa's finest hour, I don't think, in terms of his finest moment in terms of what had gone on. But Deion, I really did love him, and I thought that the Bills probably got value even at 109 for him. I had him a fourth round grade on him, but I thought a guy who clearly, if he's past the injury issues, that was one of the big sticking points.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So let's go with the inside linebacker group, and Matt Milano, obviously a guy who's given the Ravens a lot of trouble over the years. Talk about the inside linebacker group and how they're likely to deploy and likely to handle responsibilities.
They have a lot of options. For the first time in what feels like a long time, our linebacking core is a strength. And this is, you know, I'm talking from a place of the Buffalo Bills went into a playoff game 2 years ago and had to call AJ Klein off the street. He was literally getting into an RV with his family to go on vacation. And the Bills called and said, "Hey, we need you to come play a playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers." That's madness. But it sort of speaks to the lack of depth the Bills have had at linebacker. I think that experience, you know, one of the phrases I always love is nobody buys a better home security system than the guy who just got robbed. So the Bills have put a concerted effort into fleshing out that linebacker core. And it's finally, I think, it's led to what this iteration of the linebacker core is. Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano together in conjunction, they're both pursuit style linebackers. Neither one is a player that you'd look at in terms of their size and their physicality and say, well, their size anyway, and say that they project as a every down, you know, early down run defender, a thumper in the run game. They very much are more of the coverage style players, but they both have hyper aggressive play styles. It's like, you know, people look at a guy, Teron Johnson's size, the nickel corner for Buffalo, who is very well regarded around the NFL. There was a lot of people who thought he was too small to play that role. And yet the success of the Bills defense over the last 6 or 7 years has been because we have a tiny cornerback who just has more dog in him than most people his size. That is infectious, and it's kind of become something they look for when they scout players to fit this scheme. So you've got a Terrell Bernard who plays in terms of run defense and physicality a little bit bigger than he looks and a little bit bigger than he measures out. You've got Matt Milano, who just has a nose. What I think makes him unique is that he can come back. When you think about the front seven box and where players align, Matt Milano pre-snap can line up deeper than most linebackers and still crash the line of scrimmage and more often than not pick the right running lane in order to continue making disruptive plays from the linebacker spot. And that allows Sean McDermott to get away with a lot of things. Him being injured the last couple of years robbed our defense of that. And so they had to find other ways to create that. If Matt Milano can stay healthy, this defense has the chance. Like, this is the first time Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano will have had to play an extended amount of football together if he stays healthy. And in that way, I see a lot of playmaking ability, both in the pass and against the run. Like, Ravens fans will remember Terrell Bernard's penchant for punching out footballs and attacking the football and fumbles. And
do we have to relive this again?
No, I won't do it to you. I like you, Ken, and I like your fan base. I won't do that. But behind them is where this is interesting. You have Dorian Williams, who filled in admirably for the injured Matt Milano last year, and then he's a weak side linebacker who plays with a lot of physicality. They'll put him in goal line packages because when you're dealing with a team that might be running the football, he's maybe the best run defending linebacker we have. And yet at the same time, he's also athletic enough that when Jonathan Taylor took off downfield on us in a game against the Colts, Jonathan Taylor was running at 21 miles an hour. He was clocked by Next Gen Stats. Dorian Williams caught him by running 21.5 miles per hour and stopped him at the 3-yard line in a series that we would ultimately force a field goal. Dorian Williams is a freak athlete, and he's a very physical, aggressive linebacker, but that aggressiveness gets him in trouble in coverage, which is why you'd never want him to be your starting weak side linebacker. I mean, I shouldn't say never. We were still a good team with him out there. But the idea of the three, Terrell, Matt Milano, Dorian Williams, it's such a great group of linebackers. And then you throw in the veteran Shaq Thompson, who Sean McDermott just can't help himself. He saw a former Panther available and was like, I got to have it. Brandon, you just got to go get me a former Panther, or else it wouldn't be a Buffalo Bills season.
So Milano, I want to talk about specifically for just another second, because he's a guy who's has hurt the Ravens certainly in the past and has been a guy who in an 8-year career has been hurt a lot. But you know, even when he's played not very many snaps, he's still been an outrageously good coverage linebacker. He's in his ninth season right now. Last year is the first year he'd ever allowed an opposing 100 passer rating. And the passer rating throwing at Milano in his career is 79.2, which if you don't know, for a linebacker is outrageously good. You should know, because a 79.2 passer rating you would never want for your quarterback, but yep, it's outrageously good for a linebacker. Linebackers typically, you know, will often give up over 100. And it took a year where he only had 10 targets against him to have his first year where he ever allowed a 100 passer rating. That was last year. I do notice that you've got an Odell Beckham style contract on him here. I'll use that as the epithet. Yes, it is in Baltimore here, but 12.2 million of cap space this year he's taking, but he's also going to be 11.1 million of void after this year. Is this his last year in Buffalo?
I believe so. I think that there was a negotiation that took place this offseason, and they came to a restructured contract that essentially made him a free agent at the end of the year. There was talk that he could be traded. There was talk that he could be cut at some point. And I think what they did was they said, look, let's shuffle some money around. Let's get you a little bit more money now. And then we all walk away from the end at the end of this and we see what happens. And I think that the thing that they always pound the table about, which is why I was surprised to see them go with Joey Bosa, considering it was the one thing that the week before they announced the move, I said on our podcast, the one move that I would lose my mind about if the Bills went out and did it was signing Joey Bosa. And then it happened. And of course my phone blew up with text messages and tweets. And so I think availability is the best ability, and just Matt Milano's injury history and his age, it's no matter how talented he is today, I still think they like their ability to find a young guy and coach him up and find the next Terrell Bernard and okay, go find the next version of what, maybe not Matt Milano specifically, but another effective linebacker in the scheme. Even if the scheme has to change, it's better than continuing to pay for a guy who can only play 6-7 games a season.
All right. Fair enough. We talked about the secondary a little bit already, but go to the safety group specifically and talk about those guys.
This is the one keeping Bills fans up at night. And I don't understand why. I do get it to a certain degree. Taylor Rapp, Cole Bishop kind of lead the charge. Taylor Rapp can't stop hurting himself or anybody else around him. There's I think it's danger close is the artillery term in the military when you're using mortars and you say, hey, this one, where are we going to fire this one? And they go, okay, just let everybody know it's danger close, because this is going to go off. And when it lands, it's going to land really close to our own troops. That's Taylor Rapp at all times. He, in practice, he's been kicked out twice this summer for putting questionable hits on his own teammates.
Wow.
And you've watched the way last season he injured three different teammates in game with just he's a double-edged sword in human form. You love the aggressiveness that he comes downhill and triggers on the run with. You like the way he chases down passes. You know, there was a year when we won the division by beating Miami in the final week of the season. He seals the game with this diving interception, which was, I mean, it was a super athletic play. We were all very happy he made it. Also, he broke his ribs. Like, that's how dangerous the attempt to intercept that was. And he missed the postseason. And we probably go on to lose to the Chiefs because we didn't have a really good starting safety tandem. He injures himself in the Ravens game. again last year in the divisional round. He gets hurt early in the game trying to make a tackle. He breaks to he hurts Teron Johnson's arm. He fractures Teron Johnson's arm in week one of last season, and we end up missing our nickel corner for the first 4 weeks of the year. There's all of these things that Taylor Rapp does really well. And the problem is he's an issue just as much for your opponent as he is for every person who has to orbit around him. Cole Bishop has been underwhelming. He has been driving fans crazy. He is a player who's been hurt a lot, and he missed all of the last year's offseason program with a broken scapula. And it set him back, even to our own coach's admission, in terms of how he acclimated to the team. Now, down the stretch, he was active for the Ravens game, and he was around for the playoffs and for the stretch run for Buffalo last year. And in fact, if the refs didn't screw us out of what should have been an interception by Cole Bishop, or at minimum, an incomplete pass, who knows? Maybe that AFC Championship game goes differently. I can't say. It's all water under the bridge now. But Cole Bishop missed another giant chunk of this offseason program and the install of what this defense is going to be because he wasn't healthy. And normally when you have an injured player, coaches are good to not talk about it. Our coach was very pointed about Cole Bishop specifically, calling him out in the media, making some points about how he's losing valuable time and that could impact his, you know, how he's utilized. It almost sounded like our coach is mad that he thinks, a part of me just reading the tea leaves thinks maybe our coach thinks he's soft and he's trying to maybe get Cole Bishop to push himself a little bit harder, saying, listen, I know you've got some bumps and bruises, but this is NFL football. We all have them. You have to play. You have to push, or you have to focus on your rehab. You have to work out. You have to do the conditioning, whatever it is. He's in the coach's doghouse for sure. And then behind him, we have rookie Jordan Hancock, who was a nice surprise here in training camp, earned himself a 53-man roster spot. And then DeMar Hamlin, who is, again, another divisive player in amongst our fans because nobody thinks he's not the most athletic safety in the world. His eyes aren't the best. He gets caught looking in the wrong place a lot. I think the game of football cerebrally is very difficult for him, and he fights it a lot. And in that way, he gets baited into he gets caught flat-footed a lot, I guess is the way I want to say it. And during the preseason, there was a couple touchdowns that were scored specifically because Hamlin just didn't react. The ball gets snapped, and Hamlin's either too busy looking in the wrong place or just doesn't realize that the pass catcher caught the ball 15 feet from him, and he needs to condense on that. And so he's on the roster, which tells you what they must have thought about the rest of the depth chart, but it's not great.
All right. So, you know, I always get a very honest opinion of the various players. I hopefully you appreciate that about me too. But if you look at the both sides of the ball here, give me one player on each side of the ball you think matches up very well against the Ravens.
I think you're going to see a healthy dose of Cam Lewis. Cam Lewis, especially depending on what happens at starting cornerback. Now, for your listeners, our first round draft pick, Max Hairston at cornerback, is on IR. Luckily, it was just an MCL tear. It wasn't an ACL tear. It won't require surgery. So we thought we had lost him for the season. He will be back mid-season, but he missed most of the off-season program. So it'll probably be late in the season, if at all, if he bears any fruit as a player here drafted in the first round for the Bills. Tre'Davious White, that you guys are familiar with, he's here in a Buffalo uniform again. He was supposed to be our starter, and everything looked like it was going really well. He had a really strong camp. They said that his agility looked up to par. He was really doing a great job against receivers down the field. And then he injured his ankle, was carted off the field, had an MRI, and the team is being very cagey about the nature of the injury. They won't tell you. I mean, he made the final 53, but I don't know if that's just so they could get more, you know, maybe get second opinions, maybe get third opinions, decide whether he goes on IR or not. But the fact that they won't commit to him at all in the form of an injury timeline is never good, is it, Ken?
No, I wouldn't say so. And if he's on the 53, that obviously brings up all the options for not having a season-ending IR. He's not player 54 or 55 where he's on IR DTR already, right?
No. He's firmly on the roster as of today. They have not put him on any sort of designation list, but they could. Okay. And so then what that leaves us with is, yeah, you think about what we have, and I see Cam Lewis. He's this unheralded player out of UB, the University of Buffalo here, And he made the roster as an undrafted free agent, and everyone kind of shrugged at it. And then he kept sticking around the roster. And you go, wait, this guy, can we just draft a rookie and get somebody better? And you find out that Cam Lewis is this do-it-all Swiss Army knife for the defense. And this offseason, he really came into his own. Playing, you know, we didn't play Taron Johnson much, if at all, in the preseason. He had an injury scare on his very first possession. They thought he had a concussion. And they were like, all right, that's it. You go to the sideline. Let Cam Lewis take it. And he looked great. I think that depending on what happens with those cornerbacks who are injured, you're going to see last year's dimeback, Jamarcus Ingram, probably get some outside, you know, boundary cornerback reps. Wow. Cam Lewis is a player who can play safety. He can play nickel DB. He does a lot for you. He plays the run well. He plays well in coverage, except when you're Justin Jefferson and he forgets to punch the ball out of your hands instead of, like, swat the ball down. We win the Vikings game and we're the number two seed, in the, maybe the number one seed. And it's, he wants that playback. I know that. I'm still salty about it. But I think that he is a Swiss Army knife for our team on defense that most Ravens fans aren't familiar with. And then on offense, if there's a player that I think really is going to play a big role in this game, and it's why I was worried about the health report, is going to be Alec Anderson. I need to see what his practice report looks like, because as the guy who comes in and plays in our 12 personnel packages when we're really looking to run the football, it's a significant advantage for Buffalo running, which I think is our path to victory, even though everyone wants the MVP to come out and try to throw for 300 yards. It's going to be feeding the rushing attack, staying on schedule, and making sure that we're in a position not to lose the turnover battle. You do that by taking the pressure off your quarterback, but we need to support that. And I think Alec Anderson is the thing that if we have that working for us, I'm confident our rushing attack can be very good.
Ballsy call to call out your OL6 as the key factor in the game here, but go ahead.
I'm taking it.
I'm not taking the bait on the MVP, coming out and throwing for 300 yards, because that might happen. So we'll see.
Drew, how about this? I'll make you a bet. On our show, we always do Seagram's bets, where the loser has to drink a Seagram's wine cooler. They're terrible. They give you heartburn. Oh, really? There's too much sugar in them. Nobody our age should be drinking these things, Kevin. Uh-huh. So with that said, I will bet you a Seagram's Escapes wine cooler that Josh Allen throws for. I'll tell you what, if he throws for over 250, I'll give you the 250 mark. If he throws for over that, I'll drink one.
You know, the problem is the Ravens get the lead. Allen will throw for 250. I'm kind of betting against my own team. I don't want that to be the case.
Okay.
I certainly don't want to drink a Seagram's wine cooler. But we'll get together and we'll
test
the teams, because I really really appreciate you coming on as always, Drew. Great insights into the team, and it's balanced. And you hear some negative things about the other team, which is always good. But Drew, tell folks where they can find your work online.
Well, we do a weekly podcast, a live show every Wednesday or Thursday night. We're live on YouTube. We also, it's the Rock Pelt Report podcast. We do some pre-recorded stuff with a lot of really polished video editing that goes into it. You're listening to this on audio, but we do, we run a baby version of what Joe Rogan has in his podcast studio, a multicam system. I have a producer who's like my own version of Jamie Vernon, and we have a lot of fun over here. We take this stuff seriously, but not too seriously. We have a lot of fun at each other's expense. We bring a lot of great guests in, like Ken, and we like talking. Generally speaking, what I like to do is bring in people who are smarter than me and ask them questions. And so if you're interested in anything that's going on with the Buffalo Bills or in the AFC East, you know, we also do an AFC's Roundup podcast. Come check it out, and you can follow us on Twitter at Rockpile Report.
All right, and they drink a lot of beer. You heard the cans of beer opened on this show. They've got now a great backdrop that Chris built, of all these, it looks like maybe liquors of the world or something. I can't tell if they're beers, Chris, or.
So these are all bourbons, and Chris has over 140 of them in his house currently. He is a bourbon enthusiast,
Chris,
to say
you might have a problem.
You know, it's funny. I think I drink more of it than he does.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, guys. Great great having you on both again. And Drew, we look forward to seeing you this weekend. Unfortunately, you're going to miss Chris. But other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, if you want to be on a concerns podcast, you can do that. Give me that 40X loop of what you think is wrong with the Baltimore Ravens entering 2025. And you can hit me with a DM. They're always open on Twitter. Drew, thanks again for coming on.
Anytime. I appreciate the invite.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's ka'chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code FITNESS.